From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
CIUT 89.5 FM, The Taylor Reports. I'm Phil Taylor. And our guest today is Erin Mackey. She is with the U of T Occupy for Palestine. We had her on the program previous. And well, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
So we're deeply into the strike, and yes, everybody's waiting for you guys to fade. You don't look like you're fading.
How's morale? It's pretty strong. I mean, we're on day 18 today at the encampment here at the University of Toronto, demanding U of T divest from Israeli apartheid. 18 days is a long time. I believe it might be the longest encampment or occupation in U of T's history, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, students every day are still showing up, are still standing with us, standing in solidarity with Palestine and demanding divestment.
And the stakes are very high. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about what you're telling. Speaking to all media, what are you telling them about why this is all going on and what you're demanding?
Yeah, I mean, I've been getting lots of questions about the why, right? I think there's lots of people who are talking about the fact that there's tents on the lawn and, you know, why are you here? What's going on? And really the primary reason is because we are demanding the University of Toronto and its complicity in its ongoing genocide. So we know for a fact that U of T has investments in weapons manufacturing companies complicit in Israeli apartheid. And as a student, as a person, I believe that genocide is wrong and that the institution that I attend should not be funding weapons and bombs that are being used to murder and kill the Palestinian students who are here, who are my friends and whose families are in Gaza right now. And, you know, we have a duty and a right to stand up and demand better of our institutions and demand that U of T divest.
Mm-hmm. And since we spoke to you, there's been some talks, and I wish the media would pay really close attention to it. They tend to do glancing work, I would say. So what was the response of Occupy U of T for Palestine to the talks?
Yeah, so thus far we've had a total of 4 meetings with U of T administrators. 2 of them were very early on in the first couple days regarding their issues over health and safety and sanitation because U of T had closed overnight access to washrooms in the area. And so we met with them to make sure that they reopened them. And then the meetings we've had since have been about our demands. I wouldn't necessarily describe them as substantive, but thus far U of T has come forward with a proposal to create an ad hoc committee to look into divestment. And so really the issue that we take with this is that a committee is not a commitment, right? And we've seen this before. So in 2016, there was an ad hoc committee that was looking into fossil fuel divestment, and they came back and issued a recommendation that U of T should in fact divest from fossil fuels. And then U of T President Gertler, the same president that we have right now, at the end of that process came back and said no, he was not going to do that. And then 6 entire years later, Mayor Gertler finally got around and committed to divesting from fossil fuels. And so we don't have 6 months to go through a convoluted process and get a no at the end. And we don't have 6 years for U of T to get on the right side of history, right? There's an ongoing active genocide happening right now. There are people who are dying and being bombed right now. And we need divestment now. We need to end the University of Toronto's complicity. And so the process that they put forward is the exact same as the process that happened in 2016. And so we've been down this road before, and we are demanding better. We're demanding divestment.
You've been getting substantial support from faculty and community. And of course, we all discovered that the United Steelworkers have members here.
Yes.
And it starts turning into question of, well, whose campus is this? Does it belong to some unknown faces, or, you know, anonymous people, or does it belong to the student faculty? And does it have a mission involving free speech?
Right. I mean, so, you know, I myself am a U of T student. I'm graduating in June, which is quickly approaching. And, you know, there's lots of students who are participating in this campment, organizing this campment. It's being led by student organizers, Palestinian students at the University of Toronto. And like you mentioned, there's a lot of support from faculty at the school. There's members of the Jewish Faculty Association who have been really supportive. There's an entire faculty tent at the encampment right now. And we also have support, like you mentioned, from local unions. And also, it's important to note that U of T is in downtown Toronto, right? So many members of the University of Toronto community are in community at U of T and also in community at other places. And so we've been really heartened to see the support from, you know, other groups within Toronto. But really, you know, U of T and others are pushing this idea that there's outside agitators that are, you know, coming in and disrupting the campus. And I would really like to call that into question, because ultimately, who are the real outside agitators? Because to me, it's the corporations, it's the weapons manufacturing, it's those who are, you know, pushing
their
agenda.
Corporations are not on the campus. They're
right, exactly.
In your classes.
Exactly.
And debating with you the status of the environment.
Exactly. And so why is the University of Toronto, you know, so embedded with these corporations, with these weapons manufacturers, that they're unwilling to listen to their students, right? I think that that says a lot more about this institution, about U of T, and its ties to corporate interests and its ties to weapons manufacturing in particular, than it does about any of the students or anyone in this encampment.
Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Emeritus Professor Harry Glaspick, and he's writing, I know, a thesis about this business, and he says, you represent study, science, free speech, and when the university argues, they argue about property.
Mm-hmm.
You're on my property.
Right.
You're disturbing someone, you know, and they turn it into just ownership, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple things that are happening there. One is that, you know, ultimately, U of T is on stolen land. We have Indigenous aunties and land defenders who are present at this encampment, who are standing in solidarity with Palestine, who are, you know, standing in solidarity with us as we make this demand for divestment. And, you know, the idea that it is private property to begin with, I really want to call into question, because, you know, it is ultimately on stolen land. And the other thing as well is, you know, this idea that this patch of grass is also private property. You know, the university put up the fence and, you know, closed it off from the beginning, right? There's a large fence around the encampment, and we didn't put it up. It was put up by the university prior to our start. Yeah, exactly. And so we've had some folks who come and, you know, complain about the fact that they are, you know, coming and they're, you know, they're being agitators, and, you know, they're asking or they're, you know, just being really aggressive towards people at the encampment. And one of the things that they cite is, you know, that this is supposed to be public property. And again, there's lots of, you know, nuance here in the sense that it is a stolen land to begin with. And also the university itself is, you know, making the claim that it's private property. So, you know, ultimately we are here, we're demanding divestment, and there's lots of conversations about private property and fences and, you know, why the tents are there. And the tents are there because there's an ongoing and active genocide. And we are here because we're demanding divestment, we're demanding better of our institution.
Yeah. You must have gotten quite a boost from reading the decision of the Quebec judge regarding the McGill. And I think McGill and the University of Montreal are sort of combining their effort. But what did you make of that? That must have done something for morale.
Yeah, it absolutely did. There was lots of cheers on at the encampment when we read that news. And, you know, we are seeing really, you know, encampments pop up or emerge, you know, across so-called Canada and the United States. I think last I counted, there's over 140. I believe it's probably more than that now. And, you know, that decision is really monumental in terms of, you know, U of T now is in a position where they can't do something similar. And I've spoken to students who are at the other encampments across Canada. And, you know, a lot of them, especially in Ontario, are waiting for what U of T's response is going to be, right? So if U of T decides ultimately that they care more about weapons manufacturing and turning a profit than they do about their students and they do about their Palestinian students whose families are being actively murdered and bombed by bombs that U of T helps fund. If they, you know, care more about those corporations and ultimately decide that they want to clear this encampment and, you know, call in the Toronto police, that again says much more about, you know, where they're at and sets a really dangerous precedent in terms of other universities that are kind of waiting for University of Toronto to decide how it's going to move forward.
Yeah. Now, we've had this very exemplary development at McGill. We had a less exemplary matter at Calgary,
right,
University of Calgary, and at University of California, Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm noticing, and I know you follow this more closely, I assume, by the way, that these encampments get to know each other. And in both Calgary and the University of California system, they seem to have created a new problem for themselves. I understand that the faculty and students at Calgary are asking for an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
How could they be so heavy-handed?
Mm-hmm.
These are citizens. These are students.
Absolutely.
And a show was put on of muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Same with UCLA.
Absolutely.
And there's a dimension in UCLA. I'm loading up the question. There's a dimension at UCLA where The United Auto Workers, who have 48,000 members in the University of California system, mm-hmm. they've voted a strike mandate because of the treatment mm-hmm. of the students. You probably know more about it. Tell me what your thoughts about that.
Yeah, so I think in the meetings that we had with U of T administrators thus far and in their public-facing communication, they have used language along the lines of, you know, wanting a peaceful resolution to this encampment. In one of the meetings, they said specifically, they referenced the University of Calgary and said, you know, and I quote, we don't want to be like U Calgary. We don't want to be like U Alberta. And so they are seeing what is happening in other places and the backlash these universities are getting. And one thing about U of T is that it cares immensely about its public reputation and will do lots of things in order to preserve that. And, you know, we've been very clear from the beginning what it would take to end this encampment for us to pack up and go home. And that is divestment. That's, you know, divesting from weapons manufacturing companies complicit in Israeli apartheid. And the University of Toronto thus far has not met that demand. And so, you know, yeah, we'll continue to be here. And I think, you know, the police violence that we're seeing across campuses is really, truly appalling. And again, says so much more about these institutions, about these universities that are supposed to be about knowledge and learning and, you know, to building a better world, where we're seeing this immense crackdown from administrators, right? At most schools, including at the University of Toronto, in order for the police to come in and raid these encampments and be violent, right? Police are violent. In order for that to happen on campuses, the vast majority of them have to have authorization from the administration. And so ultimately, you know, it is the administration that is calling the police, which we know the police are violent and, you know, causing this immense harm on these campuses simply because they're refusing to divest from Israeli apartheid.
Yeah. There's a lot of rhetoric around this situation where people talk about how much they admire mm-hmm. certain heroes like Nelson Mandela and how proud Canada is. Mulroney, they say, reached out and helped the struggle against apartheid. But you pointed out on the show previous, I'd like you to repeat this, South Africa, the University of Toronto in South Africa wasn't very exemplary.
No, it was not. So U of T divested from South African apartheid in 1988. And, you know, it was one of the last Canadian universities to do so. And so it really, truly lagged behind. And it's quite a stain on U of T's reputation. And so U of T has the opportunity to do better, to be better, and to commit to divestment and its complicity in its ongoing genocide. And so, you know, we welcome U of T to do that. We encourage it and implore it to do that because it has a moral obligation and a responsibility to its students, to its faculty, to its staff, to not be complicit in a genocide. And, you know, I think, yeah, there's lots of points that are being made about how after, you know, student activism, you know, 30, 40, 50 years later, the universities across so-called Canada and the U.S. often, you know, memorialize that and put pictures on their websites about these protests. I know at Columbia, I remember seeing a tweet of someone who said that they used to give tours on Columbia campus and they would stop in front of one of the buildings that there was an occupation at in the 1960s and explain, you know, and talk about the student activism and how Columbia had such an honored history of student activism. I think the Columbia president even referenced it in one of the statements that she put out. And ultimately, you know, right, exactly. And so, you know, well, maybe in 50 years, U of T will do something similar. And, you know, we'll look back. Well, the administration will look back on this and say, wow, look at our students. You know, we're leading this charge. And ultimately, it's not the administration that's leading the charge. It has never been the administration that's leading the charge. U of T was one of the last Canadian universities to divest. It's, you know, the students who are demanding and fueling this change. And, you know, we're not in a position to 50 years look back and say, wow, look at them. Like, wasn't that so great? There's an ongoing act of genocide happening right in this current moment. And U of T must do better.
Yeah, it seems like your case is so powerful. By the way, I think it's resonating very mm-hmm. often over history. You know, people don't quite understand what it's about, mm-hmm. and they're not sure if they support such things. However, I think the population is very well informed. How can they miss? I mean, we get daily reports, and mm-hmm. the visual side of it
absolutely
is really a test of our humanity. I'm always instructed, I look at the sites and they say, don't look away. But I have to look away. That's how horrible it is. And ordinary people, I think, say, won't someone do something? And you're doing something.
I mean, I think ultimately, you know, I've had many conversations with people who have, yeah, complained about the encampment and, you know, think it's so horrible that we're here protesting an end to an ongoing and active genocide. And, you know, are appalled by that, but are not appalled by the fact that there is an ongoing and active genocide. And really, that's a huge contradiction. And the conditions right now in Gaza and in Palestine are horrific. I know that there's an active famine. People are still evacuating from Rafah. People are being murdered and bombed every single day. There are Palestinian students at this encampment who are grieving the loss of their loved ones, of their families. Yesterday, we had a teach-in from a doctor who was at Al-Shifa Hospital, who came and spoke to us and described the absolute horrors and atrocities that they experienced.
We've had Canadian doctors mm-hmm. who were wounded mm-hmm. years ago simply because they had come to provide medical care for people who were being shot mm-hmm. by snipers in a previous episode. And instead of being called Canadian heroes, their names are hardly known.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's remarkable. This thing of being on the side of history, and also you think of the law, the International Court of Justice has been issuing mm-hmm. statements, I don't know the terminology, edicts, to Israel saying, you have to stop doing this. Mm-hmm. You're reported to be doing this. You have to stop. And yet it goes on. You would think the University of Toronto should be out there talking to you about how can we help implement the thinking mm-hmm. of the International Court of Justice.
Right. Again, absolutely. I think, I've had lots of conversations with people about, why don't you just,
why aren't they in the lead?
Yeah, why aren't they in the lead? Why don't you just, if you craft your argument better, or if you sit them down and present them with this fact or, this statistic about the genocide, that might change their mind. And fundamentally, the only thing that is going to move U of T forward, the only reason there would be a commitment for divestment is because the students are demanding it. Because, this institution is beholden to corporate interests, to weapons manufacturing, and clearly does not care about its students, does not care about its Palestinian students whose friends and families are being actively bombed. I think there's this idea that, U of T is a prestigious institution and is leading the charge and all these things. And it's also simultaneously failing its students every single day. I have had so many conversations with Palestinian students who are here at this encampment, who have been there for 18 days, who are getting very little sleep, who are, putting their bodies on the line here simply because they have to, right? Their families are in Gaza, their families are in Rafah, and they're being bombed, and their tuition dollars are going to fund that. And it's truly, truly appalling. And the fact that this administration is not even willing to give concrete commitments just says so much about where they're at.
Yeah, it's so compelling that, again, on the property matter, Professor Glassbeck has been running, saying, here they are, free speech is supposed to be the most mm-hmm. honored thing, and yet the discussion is entirely on the matter of property rights. I can't see, but I don't see it as a winning hand. Incidentally, I should mention, and you know the details of this, there are victories happening on these
Absolutely.
On campuses.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And the big one that I heard about, the Trinity College mm-hmm. in Cambridge,
yes.
which is pretty pretty high, pretty elevated territory.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I think that, this administration for years and years, right? Again, this is not a new moment. This is not a moment. This is a movement that has been happening for decades. There are students at the University of Toronto who have been demanding divestment from Israeli apartheid for decades, and they have seen very, very little progress up until this current point. And, students are pushing for this and demanding this. And ultimately, it's been a lot. And I think just truly, seeing how unwilling they are to do this is again, just says so much about where they are. But the broader point is that, things are impossible till they're not. Institutions are immovable until they're not, right? So U of T can come back every single day and say, we will not divest. And then suddenly it will divest, right? I think that's really important to remember is that every time someone says, this is impossible, it is not, right? The university has divested before. It can divest again.
Call back or I'll come mm-hmm. see you. Let's mm-hmm. talk over. Often they're thinking, how can I change sides without losing my career?
Right, exactly. And I just, I've had many conversations, you know, talking about how, oh, you know, they can't divest for XYZ reasons and this, that, and the other. And ultimately, you know, that is not true. If the University of Toronto wanted to end its complicity in this genocide, it could. It could create the processes. It could expedite the timeline. It can make the commitments. It simply does not want to, right? And I think that that's really important to remember, is that it is absolutely possible, and it is a choice on behalf of this institution, on behalf of the U of T administration, not to divest, to continue to be complicit in this genocide. Every single day they don't divest, they're making an active choice to take tuition to take students' tuition dollars and invest that in weapons and bombs.
Yeah. Incidentally, you've had message of support, and we should remind everybody, Gaza has been in this miserable state for so many years, mm-hmm. since the Nakba, but also the period of incarceration where the fence was built, et cetera. But there were universities there, and they're aware of you, aren't they? And they, by the way, to my knowledge, they've destroyed those universities. Are any of them left?
Yeah, so all 12 universities in Gaza have been completely destroyed, which is quite horrific. And we, you know, brought that forward to the one meeting we had with U of T President Mayor Gertler prior to this encampment, after the occupation that we held of his office. And, you know, we told him that, and he pretended to not know, which we find truly, truly appalling. But again, every single university, all 12 universities in Gaza have been completely destroyed. And so as we talk about how graduation is approaching and, you know, convocation will be happening quite close to the encampment, and the university, you know, wants to clear this encampment, you know, to allow for graduation, I'm reminded that there are thousands and thousands of students who cannot have a graduation because their universities do not exist, because their professors have been murdered, because their friends and their families have been murdered. And so for the university to say that it cares about this graduation and wanting to have, you know, a graduation instead of caring about the fact that it's funding a genocide is truly, truly appalling.
Yeah, I was actually, it's a tragedy from which I'm only learning new things. I mean, for example, they're very distinguished academics, mm-hmm. who were at those universities, mm-hmm. that were destroyed.
Absolutely.
And academics who lost their lives, lost their family.
Mm-hmm.
It should be open and shut case. Actually, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, why doesn't the faculty go on strike? Because in solidarity with dead or wounded faculty, mm-hmm. at a university where there is no army, mm-hmm. or air defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing that I'll add is in our conversations with the administration, something they've come back with is creating a Institute for Palestine Studies as kind of like a counter proposal, which, you know, is something that faculty at U of T have been pushing for years. And, you know, the fact that it's under these conditions that they would be receiving it is quite appalling. But ultimately, you know, it wasn't our ask that they create an Institute for Palestine Studies. Our ask is for divestment. And, you know, if U of T has this institute and studies Palestine, but then funds the weapons and the bombs that go to destroy Palestine, it will not be about studying Palestine or Palestinian liberation as a movement and in, you know, an ongoing and active way. It will be to study Palestine as something that is past and something that is, you know, no longer in the present, because U of T will play a role in destroying that. And so, you know, again, like, they can throw this thing our way, and, you know, faculty are pushing for Palestine studies and, you know, studying Palestine and having space for these scholars to learn and to educate others and to share their knowledge and their teachings is important, but it cannot be under the conditions of this institution simultaneously investing in weapons and bombs that are being used to destroy Palestine and Palestinian people.
Yeah. And of course, one of your demands is end relations with the universities, mm-hmm. in Israel who are supporting, mm-hmm. The army, because they don't have to either. Mm-hmm. If they have their own standards, they could say, we don't want to be involved with intelligence or creating bombs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's their choice.
Right.
You would think that would be doable.
Mm-hmm.
And also, why doesn't the university commit to rebuilding the University of Gaza?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And say, that's our partner, new partner. Mm-hmm. We have a new partner, mm-hmm. and we're going to do this. We're speaking to Aaron Mackey, University U of T, Occupy for Palestine. And lastly, let's do this again. It's disclose and divest,
mm-hmm.
and the third one is
cutting ties with Israeli academic institutions that are complicit in this ongoing genocide.
Well, Aaron, we're very grateful you took the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to chat and support local radios. And
you guys are an inspiration to all of us, and we pretty know you're going to succeed. This is the Taylor Report. We're going to take a little break. with Flattens Growth, and we'll be back.